Hello again, this is Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader. He's part of a new generation of American soccer broadcasters, the young people emerging in Major League Soccer, National Women's Soccer League, the U.S. Men's Team, the U.S. Women's Team, United Soccer League. Mike Watts, he's an Ohio native who went to school at Fordham University in New York. Vin Scully, Mike Breen, Spiro Dedis, Michael Kay, Chris Carino, among its alums. Mike Watts works, and he works a lot. Thought you might want to get to know this up-and-comer just a little bit better. Hope you enjoy this conversation. Maybe the busiest man in radio, television, and streaming, Mike Watts, has a few minutes to chat with us about what he does. We'll talk some soccer, but give me a little bit of an idea, Mike, of where you've been and what you've done, or maybe a good way to describe what you do is tell me what you're going to do this very week in broadcasting.
Sure. John, good to be with you for one. Obviously heard a ton of your work over a number of years. To start with, you know, this week, Tuesday is international soccer for World Feeds. Had a game between the Honduran and a Panamanian team last night. Turnaround on Wednesday and do a USL championship game that's on the West Coast from the same studio here in Florida. A Thursday, I'll fly home and work a game for SEC Network from my spare bedroom with the studio that they've put in there. Friday, I'll fly to Dallas and call Texas and Oklahoma football for Westwood One. And then Sunday, I'll fly to Baton Rouge to call LSU for SEC Network on Sunday night. So a smooth five-game week covering three, four different leagues. Pretty standard for the fall.
So most of that is soccer. The Texas, Oklahoma, of course, is football. The LSU game is soccer, or are they playing football on Sunday night?
No, if only. No, that's soccer, and got a nice program building there. Sean Hudson does a good job, so we're excited to get to Baton Rouge, and they've been setting attendance records there, and it's the only place in the SEC after 7 years with SEC Network that I've never been to. So Sunday's the day.
This is the time. This is your moment. Baton Rouge. You no resume is complete without a game at Baton Rouge. You know that.
Right.
So there you go. So why the nomadic thing? Why so much at so many things going on at one time? How does that, and what's the genesis of that?
Yeah, I think anyone who works as a freelancer sort of begins to build out different relationships with different people. And you know, I think the easiest answer to it is once you say no to somebody, you don't know that they're going to come back and ask again. So logically, it started at, you know, 2015 with USL games, and so you want to make sure you're staying involved there. And then ESPN came along in 2016, and you want to find ways to make that work. In 2018, it's Westwood One. So even within this week, it's something where for one, you like the work, you love the work. Otherwise, why are we doing this? But also that little nagging feeling that maybe this is the time where, you know, you say no, and it's because maybe you don't want to give that extra this week, or it's a more difficult travel schedule. There's a couple of early flights that aren't optimal, but you don't want that to be the reason you don't get asked back. So you just keep grinding it out and trying to enjoy it the best you can, even though there are some days where you have to push it a little harder.
So this is crazy. We're doing this interview on October 4th. And so this sounds like a crazy week. Is this the norm, or is this maybe a little bit more than you would normally do?
No, I mean, if you do the math, I did, you know, 252 last year. I'm on pace for about 235 this year. I mean, you divide broadcast by days, you're talking 4.5 to 5 games a week over the course of the year. And naturally, there are some weeks that are a little lighter. than four games. And there's actually some weeks where it's heavier than that. You get to some of the international tournaments and you're doing Gold Cup doubleheaders. And, you know, I've done a number of doubleheaders with USL where if you're in a studio, you can follow the sunset, so to speak. So you do the 7, turn around, do a game on the West Coast at 10. So yeah, I wish I could say this was a heavy week, but the way it's gone in my career, it's probably about average.
So would you like those the MLS Apple TV folks to give you a call and say, hey, maybe we'll just do one or two of these things this week?
You know, that's intriguing. And, you know, ultimately I've been lucky throughout my career that I've been the USL's number one voice since I was 22 years old. So I've sort of benefited from being the guy there. The NWSL has been really good to me, these past few years, and given me a consistent role, and ESPN's given me a consistent role. And what's most important about all three of those is, you know, they've been really helpful with doing Bengals preseason TV matters to me, and doing Westwood One college football matters to me, and being able to work the Big East tournament for Madison Square Garden is important to me. And they've all sort of allowed me to do a multitude of things that I enjoy. And so it's kind of been this happy place. If Apple calls and Major League Soccer calls, naturally I'm interested in talking with everybody. But, you know, is that the one missing thing to my career, the one thing that'll allow me to totally turn it off the rest of the week? I don't know. And a lot of the guys that have worked MLS, Ed Cohen, Mark Folliwell, are NBA guys. Steve Cangelosi until this year was an NHL guy. You can go right down the line of everyone, you know, has their ball of yarn, I think, beyond the Apple TV gig too. So hopefully if that ever does come along, it would be something where I can keep my toe in the water in a couple other things that I enjoy.
Well, that's the thing, is you love the variety. It may be crazy and you're bouncing back and forth and you're preparing for 4 or 5 games a week, but is the variety and the workload a plus as well as some minus?
Yeah, I think there's definitely times of the year where, you know, physically or mentally or energy wise, you do pay for it. I think you get to that point. John, you've done this for a long time. I'm sure there's been a number of moments where you kind of go, I just don't know prep wise I'm going to get what, you know, where I need to be, or in terms of physically getting where you need to be. There's probably been a couple close calls over the years. So, you know, you try and pack it as tight as you can while also being cognizant of the fact that you need to actually get there, that there's definitely no prize for not making it. But yeah, this is what I like to do. This is what I do. Calling games and the preparation to it, it's a very defined sort of workflow for me. And it's at times nauseating how quick you go at it. But conversely, it can be kind of set your life to it, that there's sort of a tempo to this. And you get into it and all of a sudden this is just sort of what it is. So yeah, you know, off seasons are lighter where I'm doing 2-3 games a week and most of them are home in New York and I can sort of have a little more of a normal life. But, you know, the 9 months that the season's going on, it's just all I've ever done, you know, going back to, you know, turning 22 and mm-hmm. starting to do this professionally.
All right. You made a perfect segue for me. How do you balance family life with this nomadic broadcasting life? Because the games you do in the studio, sometimes you fly to Florida to do those in the studio. You don't get to do them in your back room every time. So how do you balance that?
About 150 days a year right now on the road. And ultimately the balance comes with having a wife that understands, in my case. So the fact that Olivia has been that constant rock of support for me, you know, we met in college, you know, this is all she's ever known me to do. So to a certain extent, I think you know, we both have an understanding and expectation of what the job is, but it is extremely difficult. And as I've gotten a little bit more mature in this industry, I've started to figure out that you need to set your own limits in terms of when you're willing to do conference calls. It can't only be about everyone else's schedule. It's sometimes you need to set your own, because it's because sometimes you need to have dinner at home at 6 o'clock, and just because that's convenient for a coach doesn't make it convenient for you. So starting to set those limits and trying to figure out how to best work travel around. I'm lucky that everyone I work with has been open to day of travel, which makes this whole junket go. But it's I'd be lying if I didn't say that's the most difficult part. And I met Bob Costas at Fordham. He came to speak to the kids at WFUV, and he said, you know, they'll send a limo for you. They've sent a limo for me at 5 a.m, but you still have to get in. And that means saying goodbye to your kids before the sun's up, or maybe they aren't up yet and you're gone again. And I don't look forward to that problem when I get to that, but that's the most difficult part. This is a dream, except for that.
So right now the limo is an Uber. Are you at they bring a limo for you in the morning yet? That's the dream.
I think it's 9:30 never that I'll be getting a limo, but
I don't think maybe when Costas was young or even in his prime, they would do that in 2023 anymore, because
no,
the cost and resources, maybe they would for Costas. Probably. Yeah. For Costas.
It's changed a little. Yeah. And you know, streaming money isn't NBC money.
No, not yet. That's what not yet anyway. Mike, you mentioned WFUV, and full disclosure, our son went to Fordham, went to college in Fordham, worked at WFUV. Bob Ahrens is a guy who's, you know, bumped into us here and there. I know he's very important to our son, Ben. He's not a broadcaster now, but it was important to him. And it's really one of the coolest places to broadcast. The kinds of opportunities you guys got to do that. And, you know, I'm sure, I guess there's a question in here somewhere, but I'm sure that was an advantage to you to be not only in New York, but a place where they had high standards and lots of work.
Yeah, and for one, you know, Ben went on to do what my mom wishes I had done career-wise. So there's that.
Become a lawyer?
Exactly.
You're not the only one whose mother thought that, I think. Well, we didn't expect it. It came out of the blue for us, but he's doing great. So,
yeah, she thought it'd be great at closing arguments. And I'm sure he is too. With WFUV, there's a 40-year culture now that's built into it, 50-year culture, where, you know, Mike Breen didn't have that kind of support behind him. He was before Marty Glickman. He was before Bob Ahrens by a wide margin. And so they sort of set the culture and standard on their own. The Michael Kays and Mike Breen's, Chris Carino's, you go all the way back to Vin Scully, but sort of the more modern era of WFUV. That group in the 70s into the 80s all sort of set their own tone into the early 90s, where you're still putting out really capable and professional major league announcers. You get into the mid-90s and you start adding in Marty Glickman and eventually Bob Ahrens in 2005, and the Ryan Ruccos and the Spiro Ditases. But there's this big sort of line that exists where I was sending Mike Breen, who I grew up in Cleveland, so I grew up in the LeBron James era. Mike Breen's the greatest announcer of all time in my mind, because that's what I grew up with. And I, even as I've grown to sort of get a better understanding of the industry, I still might think that. And I was sending him tapes in college. that's sort of where WFUV is awe-inspiring from a play-by-play perspective. But from a Bob Arens perspective, the Marty Glickman-isms are still there. Consider the listener, and you know, a lot of the nuts and bolts of it come from him. But it's the professionalism of how you dress, what time you arrive at games, how you speak to coaches and front office and your coworkers, the expectations from how you conduct yourself internally, and the standard of your work, all sprouted from him. And he would say it came from Vin and Marty, but I use all those lessons all the time. The same 2-hour window, the same every time the chains move, you give time and score. You go up to the 50 and down toward the goal line from midfield. I mean, little things that he tells you that at this point are ingrained fully, all go back to Bob. And the funny story about initially meeting Bob, for that matter, I sent in as a senior in high school to Fordham before I was intending to visit. And I got in touch with him. I had been doing this my last 3 years of high school. We had a broadcast club. And he brought me in, showed me around. So I knew this is what I'm going to do at Fordham. I get to Fordham orientation weekend. The first college soccer match is the first weekend that freshmen arrive, but the rest of the students haven't. So he allows me to come do a demo, and it took less than 20 seconds because I was trying to put on this bravado voice that I didn't have. And he actually stopped the recording. I went home like, oh my God, I went to the wrong place and this guy's a tyrant. And he knocks you down to build you up. And I never, never would have made it in this industry if it weren't for Bob Arens and his, at times, peculiar, but overall, I think it should be the standard of how we build young announcers' way of going about things.
Well, you certainly said everything you need to say about WFUV and Fordham by listing the people who went to school there and broadcast their names that anybody would recognize. Does the average NBA viewer know that Breen went to Fordham? Maybe, maybe not, but they know he's darn good and a very highly professional guy. So congratulations on that. And I know it was a great time for our son, and he's very proud of his Marty Glickman Award. Let's put it that way. So there you go.
That's two of us.
Maybe he's the only lawyer in Chicago with the Marty Glickman Award, and maybe he shows that off to everybody. I don't know. Could be. Maybe yeah. Not. Maybe not.
I keep mine on my shelf when I do games for ESPN for my house. And I had someone go, what trophy is that? I go, a long story short, but I was the biggest fish in a small pond once upon a time.
And I'm very proud of this.
That way.
And you should say, and it's true, you should say this is not easy to win because there are a lot of really good people who are doing this at Fordham. So way to go.
Yeah.
Is there something really magical here for San Diego? Corona through, out to Hackworth. Hackworth chipping, Conway, save, foul up is in! Oh, he's done it again! Nalani the winner! A genuine San Diego miracle!
Why soccer? You sent me, you reached out to me, I think when you were still in college, and said, hey, I want to be a soccer announcer. I know, I don't know, Bob Arens, I think, sent you to me or something. Why soccer? What was that connection? And why did you want to do that? Because even 10 years ago, it might not have been the first choice. In fact, it probably wasn't the first choice of most young announcers.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about how I got into soccer is my high school soccer team won the national championship when I was a senior. All my friends were soccer players. I wasn't a big soccer fan. I wouldn't say that I constantly go out to watch Premier League matches now either. But you start to get ingrained in it because it's all around you. And the soccer coach there was a theology teacher, is still a theology teacher, Mike McLaughlin, who won his 500th game last week. He sort of took me by the hand and taught me the sport when he didn't have to. And I'll never forget that if you aren't from a soccer watching family or culture, someone's got to grab you by the hand and help you learn the game. That left a really indelible mark on me. And I view my role sometimes to evangelize the sport in the way that Mike taught me to evangelize it. That in mind, I go to Fordham, and Ryan Mara, who's still with the Red Bulls, got drafted the following year in the first round, was leading a Fordham team that, you know, won the A-10 championship in the regular season. They won the tournament a couple of years later. They went to the Elite Eight at the NCAA tournament a few years after that. So you had a really good program there. And the women's soccer coach there, Jess Clinton, now runs Oakland Soul out in California in the USLW League. And I think she's got a great future. They both helped me along. Jim McElderry and Gavin Wise, who are now at Rutgers, and Jess. So they helped me along. And as you get further along, all of a sudden you're doing two soccer matches a week in college. You've done it for 3 years in high school. And then the professional game comes along, and it was one of the first things that sort of grabbed me and gave me an opportunity. So Mike Cohen, who's done so many Olympics and World Cups, plucked me out of obscurity at Fordham and brought me in to do the USL final. The NWSL had needed someone a year or two prior, and Mike and actually JP Della Camera helped me get my first professional job with Sky Blue in the NWSL. The opportunities started to come, and I was able to sort of slowly grow with both of those leagues because the standards of broadcast in the NWSL in 2013 and 14 a lot different than they are now. If I had been dropped into this 10 years later, I don't know how that would have worked out for me. So, yeah, it just kept building on itself. I know this is a long-winded way of getting there. It built on itself, and ESPN brought me in to do that. They also gave me football, which led to other things. And so I've been able to sort of balance, you know, the variety is the spice of life idea of finding different ways to stay engaged with other sports. But this has been the constant. There's this beautiful ebb and flow to the game and to the season and from year to year. And, you know, you really do come to fall in love with that. So as I've gone along, I don't know that soccer was what I grew up fully anticipating making the centerpiece of my life, but here I am some 10, 15 years on from when I first did a St. Ignatius soccer match, and it's 80% of my year is spent thinking about this sport.
So do you feel like, Mike, that you're part of that first generation of young people who really feels like or felt like or believed they could make a career out of broadcasting and soccer?
There's a high likelihood of that. Yeah. I can't speak for everyone, but if you look at, you know, there's when I mentioned these guys, some are a couple of years older, some are a couple of years younger, some are my age. But if you look at some of the young guys, Jake Zivin's not that much older than me. John Strong isn't really that much older than me, believe it or not. Tyler,
I think
Terrence
Jake Zivin and John Strong are about the same age, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, they've both been on this national stage for so long that I think we forget how young they were when they started. You know, but they're both a little bit older than me. Tyler Terrence is about my age and sort of came about it the same way I did. Evan Weston, and you can go right down the list. I think there's a lot of guys that have made careers in this sport where, you know, it used to be 20 years ago, it was your one local MLS guy and maybe they made enough to make it their career, but they probably had another or two other or three other jobs. And your couple of national guys. And that was really it in this country. And yeah, it's been an explosion. I've been really fortunate to never have to question how I was going to pay rent doing soccer since I was 23 years old. And I probably am the first generation where that was honestly the case. So not lost on me that the blossoming of streaming, the extent to which the professional leagues have found more stability and long-term progress. You know, the growth of soccer on TV in this country as a product, all that converged at literally the exact right moment to keep me around as long as I have.
So tell me what you think where USL and USL broadcasting fits into the big picture of American broadcasting, and maybe soccer, but maybe bigger than that.
I think this is a very interesting time for USL as it pertains to broadcasting. The Super League is coming soon. You've got two professional men's leagues that attendance-wise are thriving. And now, like MLS dealt with, the ratings weren't necessarily commensurate with the growing excitement of the sport in venues and in terms of ticket sales and in terms of the growth of the talent and the development of the talent and level of play in the league. So for USL, I don't think it's any secret. Their three-year deal with ESPN is set to expire this year, and I think there's some really exciting things that are in the near-term future for USL. And I think there's a place in streaming, a place in linear television for USL, both on the men's and the women's side, that I want to be a part of. That, you know, I think the standard of not only the league itself on the field, but the level of broadcast off it in 5 to 10 years is leaps and bounds, light years ahead of where we started. So deep down, I take just a little sliver of personal satisfaction in that, because, you know, the league that I started covering 9 years ago and the one that I work in now is not of the same, just everything about it is different. So yeah, there's a big place, I would think. And there's a lot of different companies that are interested, I would imagine, in having a role in soccer. We continue to see that. So it's as exciting a time as I can remember for the league as far as broadcast and on the field too, how we're moving this thing along.
Okay, Mike, I'm not a guy who says, hey, way back, let's talk about the good old days, right? But if you can imagine what it was like broadcasting in 1996 when we were all doing this in Major League Soccer and what it's like now, it's like the Jetsons or something. It's absolutely not even the same game, right? The resources, right. You mentioned that we all did something else. All of us did at least a couple of other things when we started broadcasting in 1996. There were a few network folks, but even they did other things. JP Della Camera always did other things. He was a hockey announcer, you know? So I think everybody did. And I'm so happy and so pleased that a generation of young people has a sort of a dream, an idea, a possibility that you can do this, when we were all just hoping the league wouldn't fold that next year. You know, we were just hoping that, you know, five camera people would show up and do the game. But we had a lot of great talent, right? A lot of great talent, but not a lot of resources. So I'm happy for you that you are at a time when the growth is obvious, when the trend is obvious, when the graph is going in the right direction and you can see it. And that's for you just in the last decade, right? Just in the last 10 years, you can see this incredible change. So I'm happy about that.
And for what it's worth, I think we all recognize the nature of the MLS deal was painful for a lot of the guys that had built this around the league for so many years. And ultimately, as the 99ers gave the ability for the future U.S. national teams to stand on their shoulders. And you can go, all these great players sort of continue to climb on each other's shoulders and lift the U.S. women's national team and the NWSL. Announcing wise and in terms of production, someone had to do it in 96 to grow into, you know, where we gradually have ended up. This was not, I think a lot of people probably think snap the fingers and here we are. Yeah, it's the Jetsons, well put. It is shocking. And it's not just technological advances, it's understanding the game in this country and growing the game in this country. It did not happen overnight.
What do you think Michael Cohen and JP Della Camera saw in you when you were a young man, maybe still just getting out of college? What did they see in you, you think?
I've never been asked that. I think they saw energy and passion and a willingness to work. They probably saw someone who, from a nuts and bolts perspective, was still fairly raw from a understanding how to build into a game. Still raw. I still have critiques. I've kept every critique I've ever gotten from both of them. And so I still have those. And I do look back at them from time to time because those were the basics that we were working on way, way back. JP watched one of my 2014 NWSL games for Sky Blue, and that was the first time he ever critiqued a tape for me. So, like, I still have that handy and check back on that kind of stuff from time to time. And now to consider him a colleague is staggering. To sit down and have breakfast with JP this summer is like, wow. So, yeah, I think they saw some positives, and I also thought they probably realized it needed a little elbow grease.
What is it about broadcasting and doing this that that so excites you and gets you out the door in the morning and gets you to the airport and, you know, your limo Uber rides to the airport? What is it that keeps the juice flowing about what you do?
You don't know what the next game is going to bring, I think, is ultimately. And I think there's a lot of relationships that you build and people you love working with and trying to find creative ways of going about things on TV, on radio, of testing yourself and challenging yourself and wanting to do better and wanting to grow in your work. And, you know, all that's there. But I think ultimately, as a play-by-play broadcaster, you hope that there's something special tonight. And when I did Cincinnati and Pittsburgh in the Open Cup, the reality was I was really excited for that match because my best friend is a founding member of the supporters group in Cincinnati. And I think Pittsburgh is the odds on favorite to win the championship. And maybe that's an Open Cup upset this year. And Alvaro Barrayal scores the goal that ends up being a Puskas nominee. And I'm calling it. It's the only goal in American soccer that got nominated for that this year. It's one of like four in the last decade. And this random Wednesday night in a game where, honestly, it's one of my lowest paying gigs. It wasn't the most cameras. It wasn't even on site. And it ends up being one of those moments I can look back on and go, I may have seen the greatest goal of my life in this random game.
Barrayal got under the goal! What a goal for FC Cincinnati! Super creamer! Goal of the tournament! Maybe the history of the tournament! Alvaro Barrayal makes it 2-0.
And that was a 5 a.m. wake-up call and a 7 a.m. flight. And you land at 10, and you've got another game after it. and it's in the middle of this incredible vortex of things going on around you, and yet there's this one moment, this eye in the storm, where this picturesque goal of nothing ends up being a worldwide phenomenon, and none of that's lost on me. That possibility exists every single time I put on a headset.
That's what Bob Arons was talking about when he says, show up and be prepared every day. You never know what you're going to see. Old baseball broadcasters I know will tell you that we do 162 games a year, and every day I see something I haven't seen before. And yeah, it's sort of a marvel of it, and you've got to be prepared for it. So, well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Congrats.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. And by the way, you're a play-by-play announcer, so you'll understand within that call. He turned his numbers toward the camera right before he hit it. You love to see that. You really do. Yeah. If that goal came from the other side, I would have spent the next 7 seconds trying to figure out who hit it.
Well, you've probably done plenty of games where it was a little dark and you had to get your glasses on to see in the corner. And even then you weren't sure because everybody's 5'8 and they all have the same color hair and you can't see the numbers. It might be a little muddy because they're all covered. Like some days, you just bless the broadcasting gods that they've done you a favor. So there you go.
Yeah, I just feel like you and I are in a weird fraternity where when I say he turned his numbers toward me, you go, oh my gosh, it changed the whole call.
Oh, bless his heart.
John, I enjoy it. And I obviously grateful for the invite, but also, you know, continue to do great work at Nebraska. I'm sure those students are getting a tremendous amount of real world understanding and experience, and this is as good a education as they can get if this is where they want to be. So keep at it.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And happy trails and safe travels. Everybody we know who does this will tell you the games themselves are why we do this. The work is getting there and back.
Right? Yeah, that's it.
That's the hard work.
It's just a smooth, like, 9,000 miles over 7 flights this week. So I'm sure, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Nothing. Not in the American airline system. But you probably have all those airline miles now and no time to use them. So.
Yeah.
Well, go get them. Thank you. I appreciate it. Mike Watts is the voice of USL, NWSL, Westwood One, Bengals preseason television, and more. Works nearly 5 games a week on television, streaming, radio. That's right, 5 games a week. Thank you so much for being here. I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media.